It's Tennessee Titans talk. It's summer. It's usually our dead period. I don't like the NFL in the heat of summer because it's just Travis Kelce podcast quotes, but we have real Tennessee Titans news.
Yeah, it's actually a very busy time of the offseason for us when generally, like you said, there's absolutely nothing going on. Everything that you do hear is just people trying to justify them getting paid over this period where there's nothing to actually talk about.
We've talked about DeAndre Hopkins pretty much all spring and all summer, and it happened. I think the Titans played hardball. I think we're his best offer. He joins us on a two-year contract, but Landon's going to give us the real details, first and foremost, of the guaranteed money, what matters, and then there's some incentives there.
Well, the base contract is 2 years, $26 million, so that's 13 a year, which is incredibly cheap for a guy of Hopkins' stature. If he plays up to most of what potential he has left, that would be an absolute bargain. And now the guarantees, there's $3 million each year that he can reach, and it comes in the form of production, which is good. So for this coming season, for him to get the full $3 million in guarantees, he would need to get 95 catches, 1,050 yards, and 10 touchdowns. If he gets less than that in each of those categories, there's $250,000 less, depending on how far below he was. So pretty much, he's making $13 million a year base, and I would guess probably he's going to get close to between $1.5 and $2 million of those guarantees. Maybe $3 million, but it's just hard to tell with how this offense is. So either way, we're getting a really good player who last year showed he still had it for an under-market deal. If we have to pay him more, that's really good because those stats I just listed, 95, 1,050, 10, that was A.J. Brown's best year for us in 2020.
The minimum that he's going to get if he isn't good or if he's injured is $16 million, right?
Yes.
So 13, but he automatically gets a guarantee of 3 years, but it's basically a buyout for the second year, is my understanding, right? But regardless, either way, John, that does, I know that he's partially played the last 2 years. He's over the age of 30. That still seems like a really good deal, right?
I think it's great. It's a win-win for Titans fans because worst case scenario, you're paying $13 million for above average receiver. Best case scenario, you're paying $16 million and you know, we're doing really well because he's over 1,000 yards and crushing it on touchdowns. So we've watched this guy for far too long, you know, playing with the Texans. And, you know, thankfully, he's very familiar with our entire division. I like the fact that he has familiarity with every stadium in our division. So basically, that's what, 8 games out of the 17 that we have that he's familiar with the turf, with the field, with all that kind of stuff. And he's played at a high level on those in those respective areas. So I think it's all gravy.
Landon, I think we've heard from our fan base some in the few days since we found out about this deal. Sort of, I think a more casual fan says, this sounds like more of the same, namely Julio Jones. For me, we didn't give up draft pick compensation. That really hurt for him to not be any good and then us give up a second round pick in the following year, a mid round pick. What should fans expect? Should they be excited about this? And how is this different from some of our other recent signings?
Well, we should be excited because now instead of Nick Westbrook having to be a starter for us, it's DeAndre Hopkins, a guy who is past his prime, but is still a really good player and is far, far better than any other option we could have gotten over this offseason. And to put his contract in perspective, right now with the base salary of $13 million, he's 23rd among receivers in average per year. Say he gets the full $3 million guarantees each year, so he's living up to his contract. He's only 20th in average per year. So that is an absolute bargain for what he could be based on the talent he has shown in the past. And initially, I wasn't as excited as you two were just because we've been burned so many times. But the thing is, he's younger than the other superstar receivers that have come by Nashville recently, and he's healthier. So Randy Moss was pretty much washed. Like, he got traded and cut. Andre Johnson was ancient by then. And Julio, obviously, the hamstring injury was worse than we thought, and we should have known better, but we knew about the injuries, and you took the risk, and it didn't work out. Now, Hopkins, he tore his MCL 2 years ago, and he got busted for using PEDs to probably help him heal faster and get back, so he missed some games last year. He was still good. I think his raw production is a bit overstated because he was fourth in targets per game and 10th in receiving yards per game, which is still really good for a guy coming off an MCL tear, being suspended, being an older receiver. My question with him is why I'm a bit more, I guess, cooler on the signing is we're not the kind of offense to really have him put up big numbers and really justify the contract on the surface level. Because I looked through the past when we've had Tannehill and we've had these great offenses. The most receptions in a season were A.J. Brown with 70. And Hopkins is a guy that is getting 10-plus targets a game, 6-7-plus catches a game. He is a guy who does his damage on volume by just so much volume and killing you over and over and over. That's what we saw last year because, like I said, he was fourth in targets per game. They were just throwing it to him, partially because their team sucked and they're behind a lot. Part of it is because that's how he wins. Now, we're not going to throw to him that much. We'll throw to him a good bit because we, outside of him and then Burks and Chig, we have no one to throw to. But he's not going to be getting 10.5-11 targets a game like he was in Arizona. So his production, I think people will be a bit underwhelmed with. But just the actual player and the efficiency metrics, I think he'll be just as good, if not better. Because now he's going from a spot where he's by far the only option on offense to worry about to a team that has proven that it will use the play action game a lot, set up receivers on over the middle stuff, and he's got a young receiver and a young tight end opposite to him to work with and a better quarterback than what he was working with. And he has spoken good things about Tim Kelly, who was his offensive coordinator in 2019. There's not a lot to be worried or upset about or down on with this signing because, yeah, we spent a good bit of money, but what other receiver could we have gotten for that same price? No one.
Johnny makes a lot of good points there, but the biggest thing is, what's the risk?
Yeah.
Just the money. We had the money. I didn't want to see a lot of money guaranteed in year two. I didn't see before he was released by Arizona. I didn't want to see us give up a draft pick. We didn't do any of those things. The biggest thing is when we didn't have A.J. Brown last year, and especially when Burks showed a little promise, but then he was out, every team knew we could not stretch vertically at all. And we're just him. He just needs to be out there and healthy. I don't really care about his stats. I thought he might care more about and try to go to a team, but I think he just knows he'll be the undisputed number one option. It'll be a familiar place for him. He's from South Carolina. He's not from, there's just a lot of reasons, but the big reason is he's out there. He's going to make life a lot easier for Derrick Henry and Ryan Tannehill because he absolutely will, regardless of his age. I think he had 8 touchdowns in half a season last year. I mean, he still is a threat, and that is something has to keep our offense honest down the field. I am so glad that he's there. I just want him to be healthy and on the field more than being super productive. And, big fellow, the other thing is, why do you think the market for him, is it something maybe we don't know or we're not thinking about? I know it's late in the year. Not every team has cap room. Why do you think the market for DeAndre Hopkins wasn't more than $13 million a year?
Yeah, well, a couple things. Number one, you hit on the head, and Lane, it was one thing that you didn't, though probably the only thing you didn't mention, regardless if he's going to get the production, he's going to draw the attention. So he's going to lighten up that box for Henry to do Henry things. And then, you know, when somebody doubles him, Burks is more than capable of being a big play guy, and he's going to develop into that guy too. So I think this is a win-win situation. I do wonder, kind of like you guys are hinting at, if he doesn't hit his numbers or even come close. Sure, we're on the hook for 13 mil. He makes 13 mil. Does he become a drama queen in the offseason or towards the end of the year if we're making a run and he's at...
Well, I don't see that being an issue because Hopkins has been a consummate pro. And even if he's just going to hit the first tier of incentives, that's not asking much for him in terms of volume. And now throw a ton, yes, but like it's him and Burks and then Chig is a lower volume, high efficiency guy. So there's nothing stopping him. So it's not like, oh, he's got this competition, so he might be it. No, he's going to get as many targets as we decide he's going to get.
And I agree. And I think he will hit those numbers. And I think Tim Kelly is smart enough to know to get him involved early and frequently. I think that it benefits Burks to see him get involved and see how to operate as number one.
Tremendously.
And it's tremendously. So many great things. And I almost wonder if AJ had been here last year. I mean, obviously, if AJ were here, we wouldn't have Burks. But if we had a veteran presence, I mean, you're not going to tell me that Burks is going to learn how to be a number one from Bobby Trees. Like, that's not the case.
Yeah, it's all about the ceiling and not just for DeAndre Hopkins. The season has a higher ceiling because, yeah, it might blow up. It may not work. This is football. It's a tough game. People get hurt. People age out early. At least it gives us some hope and kind of a ceiling. I really appreciate the move. Based on that, and we'll start with you, John, and I want the same question from you, Landon. How does this change your outlook? You know, what we could possibly do? Is it materially different than it was last week? We'll start with you, John.
I think it is. But before I get there, I just want to make one funny point realization when you guys were both talking about the former failed experiments of Julio, Andre, Randy Moss. Think about eventually someday in Canton, all of the guys that will have been on this team at one point or another. You know, we've got all four of those receivers we mentioned. We've got AP, we've got, you know, Eddie George, Henry. It's kind of cool to be, have that much representation eventually in the Hall of Fame. You know, obviously it doesn't matter because
there could be a weird afterthought exhibit
right.
about how they well, were not good for us, but were great for other people.
No, but even when we went to Canton in 2019, we saw stuff from like Steve Hutchinson where there was a Titans jersey. There was representation, you know, of two-tone blue in the Hall. And I just think that's cool. And if you think about the names to put on that jersey, it's kind of neat. And Hopkins adds to that list. Outlook for this season with Hopkins, I think it does change dramatically. I thought without Hopkins, we only had like a puncher's chance in a lot of games. I think with Hopkins, that improves a lot. I'd probably put our floor at about 9 to 10 wins. And I think Hopkins is probably worth about 2 or 3. So a ceiling, maybe like 12 to 13 wins. And I know that's bullish. I'm always bullish.
You're here to be bullish.
And that's what I do so well. And you know, I think, like we said, it's going to loosen up the run game. For Henry, I think we've got that to look forward to. We've got a new jersey unveiling that we have something to look forward to. And, you know, everybody gets jazzed for that. And we'll talk about that in a minute. We've got a competitive game in London. Kind of upset it's going to be there as opposed to here. It's just a different level of competitiveness and a lot of different things going on. So I'm pretty bullish. I think we get to 12, 13 wins.
Well, I'm ready for some cold splash water. So Lane, how does this change your outlook? What was it? What is it now for the 23 season?
My outlook before was really pessimistic. It would have been an uphill battle just to compete for the division, let alone a wild card spot. And of course, adding Hopkins, going from one of the worst starters in the NFL to an above average one at worst in Hopkins is a huge benefit, especially when it's at a position as important as your top receiver. To me, the one thing that actually does have me excited about Hopkins that I haven't seen discussed schematically, short yardage over the middle, just chain moving ability, because that's something that he's been doing more and more. He's been working more in the slot over the past couple years, catching more short passes. And we didn't have that last year outside of Robert Woods. Burks was a down the field big threat. Chig was too low volume to be a consistent guy over the middle. We did not have that consistent guy to move the chains and get another first down over the middle. We could piece it together with Hooper and Nick Westbrook and what have you, but just having that consistent threat over the middle that we can rely on is really going to raise the floor of this offense, because now instead of it being Henry just keeps getting positive runs and Burks and Chig hit some big plays, that instead of that being how the offense succeeds, it's Hopkins adds a layer of consistency and depth to it that we don't otherwise have. I'm going from it's going to be tough for us to win the division to we're neck and neck with the Jags. And if Hopkins looks more like his old self than we've thought, then we're the front runner for the division again. Our cornerback room still scares me and it could easily blow up in our face. But I mean, we've seen just over and over this team under Vrabel does better than it should. And Hopkins is going to push us from being in a position where better than it should is 500 play to better than it should could be winning the division for sure, pushing for one of the higher seeds because we don't have a nightmarish schedule. I feel good about it. I'm not over the moon just because I'm still jaded about Julio. And so it raises my expectations from, hey, we're going to try and compete for the division. It'll be pretty nasty in terms of watchability too. This is easily a chance to win the division and push even higher if Hopkins is better than we think. If Henry with this offensive line looks better than we think and the defense plays better than its cornerback room should be. So it's hard to say anything negative about it because it's not a very risky move for what could be an incredibly helpful addition.
So guys, Nicholas Petit-Frere was our presumptive starter at right tackle going into the season. We've made some changes and added some folks on the offensive line. I feel better about it than I did going into last year. Still don't feel great about our depth, really at all. This guy really hurts us. 6-game suspension for violating NFL's gambling policy. You guys have any thoughts on that? And of course, we had George Fant in, who, speaking of something left in the tank, you know, last year things were happening and we weren't bringing people in. That really made me mad. And somebody got fired over it, right? We're at least bringing people in and kicking tires. I know, John, you've been saying for years, why don't we kick tires on free agents and bring them in?
I definitely feel more comfortable than I had than at any point of the last season. So that's a positive. Is there any way for him to appeal any of this, or just his 6 games? That's what the league is doing, and that's kind of it. Because I mean,
I'm gonna guess this is gonna be ironclad, right? What could you say? What could you appeal? What extenuating circumstances would they be?
I mean, he didn't gamble on the NFL, so I think that's one. I mean, that's rule number one of this whole gambling policy: don't bet on the NFL. He didn't do that. Bet on other sports. He was at a team facility in the offseason. I, you know, again, the NFL wants to, like you're saying, you know, know, ironclad. There's going to be no wiggle room at all. But I think if there's ever wiggle room, and a bunch of players have been getting hit with this in the offseason, maybe they lighten up as training camp hits and, you know, guys start dropping. I don't know. Maybe not. But I don't know if there's that formal level of appeal anymore. And if so, what's that look like?
I wouldn't expect it with how they're handling gambling in classic NFL fashion, which is to say, incredibly hypocritical and infuriating to everyone, just period. Because like you said, big fella, yes, he was gambling on team facilities. It wasn't even the sport he's in. Who really cares? And yes, you can say, well, gambling, it opens you up to getting into debt and you getting into issues and you're having to maybe have to work with people to fix a game to pay off that stuff. You could say that about anything. Like,
yeah, I could buy stock.
Professional athletes go, yeah, they go broke all the time. Like, it's been a big rumor for years that Adrian Peterson kept playing because he was broke and he had to pay for all of his stuff he had racked up during his prime when he was getting paid a ton. So what's really the difference between you having gambling debts and that influencing your play on the game versus you just, like most professional athletes, like you being broke and having to keep playing and make money, like what's really the difference there? And it's not like, and it's not even like with Calvin Ridley when he bet on his team to win. At least you can say, well, he had inside information about that stuff, even though a guy is betting on his own team to win. What's he going to do? Play harder? Even though
he doesn't have inside information.
Play harder and influence the game? Isn't that what you want for him to? I don't know. It's hypocritical. They don't care. They're going to push a million DraftKings and bet MGM ads, and Kevin Hart's going to be on the screen a whole bunch and yell at you about betting on whatever book he's shilling for. So it's dumb, but it's only six games, luckily, and at least we're not that Colts guy that actually did deserve his suspension.
Oh, he's an idiot.
Using, yeah.
If you're taking a prop bet on one of your own players on your team that you have immediate access to, you know, he's probably done. He is probably done. That's the, you know,
I'd expect
Pete,
so especially
Pete Rose, like,
and that's a situation where I can understand where it's right to bring down the hammer as it was. But with Petit Frere, it's like, he put down a prop bet on the NBA playoffs. Who cares?
And he's still a stupid kid.
He wasn't
kid.
Following the rules that they stated. The other guy was insulting the integrity of the game potentially, but it's still rules that they had to have known. As far as the audit process, the appeal process, I'm going to guess they've already been through something kind of like that. The NFL doesn't want this to be changed. So I bet they've gone through quite a vetting process. I bet this is ironclad. And it really hurts us. Maybe Fant will A sign and B, be good, and C, be healthy.
To your original question, yeah, Fant. So he's supposed to visit for a workout and evaluation on Saturday. I expect we sign him. I think Rand Carthen he's not the messing around kind of guy, and he wants to get things done. He realizes the inadequacies of this team, especially with NPF on the shelf for six weeks, and he wants somebody to be part of this team through training camp. And Fant is a guy, he's been around for a million years, and you know, as we've texted in 20 and 21, he was pretty good. 22, he was injured and he kind of got put on notice a couple times. I kind of hope that a guy has some time to recover, to heal, get in a different system, kind of show what he's
somebody
made
big
of.
To come row the boat that's done it before. And George Fant could be that, ostensibly. And we need that. I'm glad that we're not. Landon, if we roll out what we have in training camp and somebody gets hurt, which they will, offensive line before September, we're going to be in trouble. So we got to have another body at least, right?
For sure. And even if Petit Frere hadn't been suspended and we somehow went without injuries, I still had a lot of questions and worries about this offensive line. Petit Frere losing six games of reps and then that messing with the chemistry, having to bring in Fant, who was pretty good the 2 years before this past season, but he had a knee injury, which made him play really bad. Hopefully he's healthy and he comes in. The thing is, like, Petit Frere or whoever we're having to replace him with, even if Fant is 100%, it's almost impossible. It's pretty much impossible for him to be worse than whatever we'd have anyway. So
yeah,
there's no downside, because it's not like, oh, we lost a good star, so we need to find a potential replacement. It's like, yeah, there's clearly a drop off.
Well, his market value.
Petit Frere last year, he was a rookie. You can say all that, but like, he really, really struggled.
Yeah.
So going from him to Fant at worst is likely a lateral move.
Well, and
for that to happen in the offseason, that's nice because you're not getting worse, but it's also bad because you were pretty bad to begin with.
For Fant, the market value is right around $3.5 million a year, which is less than we are paying Aaron Brewer. So Rand, find a way to do it, because I don't want to be sitting here at week four of the season been like, man, you know, we should give Eric Fisher a call, and we should, you know, all these guys that, you know, we kind of missed the boat last year, let's call 41-year-old Jason Peters, see what he's doing. I don't want to do that. I want to be able to make a move now, get a guy ingrained with our system, and give him an opportunity to actually succeed, not to come in here and look like a turnstile. I just don't think that helps us at all.
He's really the best option we could probably get. And just with the situation we were left in this offseason, unfortunately, we couldn't be like the Chiefs and reset the entire offensive line in one offseason. We didn't have the resources for it. But, I mean, Fant hopefully can be a stopgap. I'm not getting too excited about it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking at
ultimately, what can improve this year is a better coaching staff on that side of the football and some better offseason training, so we don't, it's not an absolute, everybody was so hurt last year. You're pretty much to a man. So hopefully some internal things, some non-player personnel things are happening. Fant isn't going to make or break us, but I think having nothing could break us. I mean, we talk about Petit Frere didn't look great last year. Fant didn't look great last year. They look better than his bad. We've seen how bad it can get on that Petit left Frere, side for us. So maybe we can protect the right side.
Well, and Petit Frere last year was a rookie too. So, I mean, you can't really.
Yeah, but he's going to come in week 7 out of shape. Because he's not going to be in game shape. He's really screwed himself in his second year. I mean, that's such a dumb thing. And I know he wasn't gambling on the NFL, but they read those guys the Riot Act. They had to tell him if they went down so hard on them, they told them not to do that inside of the building. And yes, I think it's very hypocritical, but I just think it's so dumb. Everybody has rules at work.
He's allowed to be with the team through training camp and through the preseason, right?
Yeah, but you know better than anybody as a former player that he's not going to be in game shape, regardless, even if he's getting to work out.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm mad at him over that, but everybody makes mistakes. And I think it hurts his development. We all know as football fans how big year 2 can be in player development. You know, we'll see how it goes. The team's doing all they can do is they keep working through the summer. Big fella, I know you're excited about the uniform unveiling. I don't really care about that kind of stuff per se. Tell us what you know about what the team has been teasing the last few days.
Yeah, so we've been joking. We were actually joking about it today in our text message chain. I was under the impression, like a lot of people on social media, that, you know, I knew they were teasing with the Oiler throwbacks, but a lot of people thought they were actually teasing a blackout jersey, because on Twitter they posted a video saying coming soon, and they had a Titans jersey, and they poured a black liquid all over it, which to me looked like paint, but Landon was like, oh, it's oil. I'm like, oh, of course.
Well, that makes sense. It wasn't literally oil, but that's what it was standing for.
Right, but, and I didn't even think that. I just was like, oh, it looks like paint. Like, it's just weird. And, of course, leave it to our organization to put out this, ambiguous thing that could lead people on one way, but they want to do the other. Because the Oiler thing has been, people have been calling for it for years. We finally knew we were going to get it, so I thought that was just it. But it seems to be that this weekend, on Saturday, they are going to unveil the new Oilers jerseys. And there's actually a spoiler, some pictures were tweeted out that it's the baby blue jerseys with the white numbers or a red outline on the inside collar. It says love you blue on the inside collar, and they look pretty great. And I think they're gonna go with the old traditional white helmet with the red face masks, which I think will look really cool. Watching Derrick Henry in that stuff it's going to be awesome for me. You better believe as soon as they drop him on NFL Shop, I'm going to have a Simmons one ordered, or maybe even a Henry. Heck, maybe both. But yeah, right now the pictures that are tweeted out, I see a Simmons one, I see a Henry one, and I see a Byard one, and they look pretty cool. And I think they're going to be really great.
Yeah, I've seen the leaks too. They look awesome. And as someone that doesn't care at all about the bickering between the Titans and Texans fans about who gets the Oilers' history and uniforms and colors and all that, this is the one time I will definitively take a side on the Titans side, because these jerseys look awesome. I'm glad we're going to get to wear them instead of the Texans.
Oh, big time. For sure. And I mean, I'm in the same boat with you, Lynn. I don't really care where everybody stands on the battle. I mean, we are the team that moved, so we kept the history. So let's just call it like it is and leave it. Whatever, they're ours. But yeah, I'm pumped that we get to wear these jerseys. They look pretty sick.
Yeah, my only thing with the whole it's our history stuff is those jerseys are one of the best in the NFL, and we say they're ours, but we never use them until recently because of the dumb rules. So hopefully, with how the NFL is changing rules so you can have more alternate uniforms and helmets, they become a consistent staple of our season as an alternate uniform.
Well, because the NFL has realized that that's what the fans want. They want to buy these other jerseys. I mean, we saw like a million of them on leaked this week with the Colts and their They're all blue, which you and you think they look like Duke. And then the Seahawks, they do look their like throwbacks.
Duke's football.
So I think it's great. I think the NFL finally wised up and they're like, oh, well, you know, we're not solving the concussion stuff today. So let's let the NFL wear some different colored helmets. It's not a big deal. I think a lot of science, too, has proven that keeping the same helmet all season long doesn't necessarily help anybody at all.
It's the same design. They switch it up if they get any impact. Surely they test those things. It's $1 billion a year industry.
But regardless, I'm looking forward to it. I've seen some Titans fans saying they want to see Hopkins as one of the main guys doing the reveal just to rub in the Texans' faces, but
I would love it.
Yeah.
Okay. It's football.
I mean, I hope he does. I guess that would be funny for like a moment for me.
He's
but
still a marketable star. Yeah. I mean, yeah.
And I could definitely see him doing that because he's their big new signing. And on offense outside of Henry, who else are they going to do? Like Tannehill's public image is really shaky in Nashville right now. Hopkins is the flashy new signing who's been a superstar.
I would do Hopkins, Skoronski, and Henry.
Yeah.
That's what I would do. Wouldn't you, big fella?
I would do Hopkins, Big Jeff, Henry, and if
I guess I mean on offense. Yeah.
Well, if I were going to do a fourth, yeah. I'd do Byard. Two offense, sure. Two defense.
I mean, kinda. The top three on offense, and Skoronski, they're going to market him. I mean, they picked him 11th, so he's pretty marketable. His grandfather played in the NFL. They're going to lean in on him where they can. Henry, we don't know if this is Henry's last year with Tennessee. I know the three of us don't want to see that, but if it is, I think it will be from a marketing and media standpoint, it'll be all Henry all year.
I hope so, and because like you just said, I don't want him to go. I think he's got so much left in the tank, and I think we're going to see it this year. So I hope that they actually extend Henry to create the room for Hopkins, because right now we don't have the room. So there are some moves that still need to be made, which is probably why this deal hasn't been signed yet. Want to see Derrick Henry rocking these jerseys for another couple of years. I was just going to say, when we went back to originally unveiling the current jerseys, I think we did Delanie Walker, Jarrell Casey, Taylor Lewan, and it might have been Byard. So that would be the two.
Byard is such so big in our fan base. I think we can guess it'll be Byard, Simmons, Henry, if there's three. And if there's those four, three, I think it'd be Hopkins or their top rookie.
The leaks have that big three, so they're certainly going to be in there, as we would all expect. And then it'll just depend however many more guys they want in there, because like some reveals only have like one or two. Like the Seahawks throwback in their video, they just had Smith and Jigba doing it. And the Vikings throwbacks, which look awesome, were like two or three guys. I think we've had some in the past where it's like five or six.
Well, yeah, if you don't do something, if you're the Vikings, you don't do something with Justin Jefferson, you're an idiot. So I think he was in them, right?
I only remember seeing Hawkinson in it. But he probably was. I just remember because that was the one picture I saw of him at first in the lighting.
All Andy could see through all the sea of Vikings was CJ Hawkinson.
Well, it's just the one picture Twitter decided to load for me. And it was apparently like the one picture, because I looked at the other ones. It was the one picture where the lighting was really bad for those jerseys, because you look at like classic pictures of the old Vikings uniforms. I'm talking like the 70s Vikings. They look beautiful.
Yeah.
This should just made it look like faded and kind of dark. All the other ones look great, so I'm super excited for those as well.
Get excited, Minnesota.
Well, I was going to say real quick, I'm a closet Vikings fan now after the Netflix series Quarterback and Kirk Cousins.
That's what I was going to ask you about on the way out, big fella.
He's kind of winning me over.
Give us a quick out on Landon will not watch it, and I've watched the first episode or two. Our friend Jackson and you have been talking about it, texting about it on the group text. Give a pitch. I know you really liked it. What surprised you about it, and why should people that haven't seen it see it?
It's like Hard Knocks, but an abbreviated version, and it's the quarterback position, which we all want to know more about. You know,
I did think it was well produced. I think it was really tight, shot really well. Kudos. Peyton Manning intros it. So I assume he's an executive producer on it. Y'all know how I think Hard Knocks is one of the best documentaries made. I can't believe they turned around that quickly. And it has shades of that, which is a really high compliment.
Oh, yeah, very much so. But yeah, Peyton Manning, he is the creator and I believe, like you said, executive director of the show. So it really focuses in, you know, obviously on quarterbacks. You get a really unfiltered look at Patrick Mahomes, Marcus Mariota, and Kirk Cousins, which, I mean, I love Mariota, but why feature him? Like,
that was the point. It was to show a superstar, an entrenched guy, and a journeyman.
Yeah, well, I think it gave more because it was just three guys that go to Pro Bowls. I mean, that'd be great, but we see those guys. I really liked the, you know, talking about their families and the behind-the-scenes stuff.
Sure.
None of those guys looked like they were putting on it. I think they picked three just really good human beings, too. They all seem like solid guys, some more interesting than others. But I think it's interesting. I think it is going to change the view of Kirk Cousins, because I think we see him as kind of blah and a little awkward. You know, maybe he still is, but he does come across really well.
Yeah. Well, and the amount of things that he goes through to keep his body right through the season and the off season, it's remarkable. I had never had access to view Kirk Cousins, and he's just he seems like an incredible human. He seems super authentic. His family seems super authentic. He's got the whitest teeth I've ever seen in my entire life. He's got a really cool house with a Murphy door that goes into his, I forget what he calls it, but it's like a trophy room with all of his jerseys and stuff. It's just hidden. Yeah. You wouldn't even know it's there.
He does seem like a normal guy that just has got touched with the football gene, right?
Oh, he totally is.
And his life is very similar to what it would be, except, you know, he makes more money and probably has a hotter wife than he would have.
Well, it's funny you mentioned his wife, but she seems like
a winner in every way.
And she is. And, you know, they even talk about, because she picks out his wardrobe for game days.
The shirt, and, the dad shirt. Right, that was funny.
The flannel.
And I like that he thought it was funny, too. He did it. Yeah, he legitimately thought it was funny.
And like, even his wife is like, you know, Kirk is just a regular guy. So we want him to look like that when he's on TV. And, you know, when his kids can point to the TV and say, that's my dad. Like, that's literally a dad. So as a dad, I'm like, oh, this is awesome.
I kind of admire that he can just be himself and he doesn't feel like he has to be anything else. I think there's so much pressure to that. He's a punchline, right? Just because he's the 12th best quarterback in the NFL, not the fifth. And I think it's got to be a tough life. And he seems insulated from it. Relies on his family. You know, it's television, but, you know, I think that everybody really kind of came across well. It's not to be salacious or anything. I think it's to show the commitment that it takes. I mean, it takes a lot of commitment. Like Marcus Mariota and his wife expecting their first child thousands of miles away from both of their families. I mean, it is a job. It's just a really high-paying, high-profile one.
Yep.
Well, that's it for Tennessee Titans talk. Glad you were with us. We're excited about DeAndre Hopkins, excited about the possibility, excited about some football. We'll be back with you guys when they put on pads and start hitting. For Big Fella and Landon, this is Nathan. Tighten up.
Tighten up.
Tighten up.